This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents The Case of the Middle-Aged Wife, a Parker Pyne short story by Agatha Christie, performed by Hugh Fraser.
The Case of the Middle-Aged Wife. Four grunts, an indignant voice asking why nobody could leave a hat alone, a slammed door, and Mr. Packington had departed to catch the 8:45 to the city. Mrs. Packington sat on at the breakfast table. Her face was flushed, her lips were pursed, and the only reason she was not crying was that at the last minute anger had taken the place of grief.
"I won't stand it," said Mrs. Packington. "I won't stand it."
She remained for some moments brooding, and then murmured, "The minx! Nasty, sly little cat! How George can be such a fool!" Anger faded. Grief came back. Tears came into Mrs. Packington's eyes and rolled slowly down her middle-aged cheeks.
"It's all very well to say I won't stand it, but what can I do?"
Suddenly she felt alone, helpless, utterly forlorn. Slowly, she took up the morning paper and read, not for the first time, an advertisement on the front page. "Are you happy? If not, consult Mr. Parker Pyne, 17 Richmond Street." "Absurd," said Mrs. Packington. "Utterly absurd." Then, "After all, I might just see." Which explains why, at 11 o'clock, Mrs. Packington, a little nervous, was being shown into Mr. Parker Pyne's private office. As has been said, Mrs. Packington was nervous. But somehow or other, the mere sight of Mr. Parker Pyne brought a feeling of reassurance. He was large, not to say fat. He had a bald head of noble proportions, strong glasses, and little twinkling eyes.
"Pray, sit down," said Mr. Parker Pyne. "You have come in answer to my advertisement," he added helpfully.
"Yes," said Mrs. Packington, and stopped there.
"And you are not happy," said Mr. Parker Pyne, in a cheerful, matter-of-fact voice. "Very few people are. You would be really surprised if you knew how few people are happy."
"Indeed," said Mrs. Packington, not feeling, however, that it mattered whether other people were unhappy or not.
"Not interesting to you, I know," said Mr. Parker Pyne, "but very interesting to me. You see, for 35 years of my life, I have been engaged in the compiling of statistics in a government office. Now I have retired, and it has occurred to me to use the experience I have gained in a novel fashion. It is all so simple. Unhappiness can be classified under 5 main headings. No more, I assure you. Once you know the cause of a malady, the remedy should not be impossible. I stand in the place of the doctor. The doctor first diagnoses the patient's disorder, then he proceeds to recommend a course of treatment. There are cases where no treatment can be of avail. If that is so, I say frankly that I can do nothing. But I assure you, Mrs. Packington, that if I undertake a case, the cure is practically guaranteed." Could it be so? Was this nonsense, or could it perhaps be true?
Mrs. Packington gazed at him hopefully.
"Shall we diagnose your case?" said Mr. Parker Pyne, smiling.
He leaned back in his chair and brought the tips of his fingers together.
"The trouble concerns your husband. You have had, on the whole, a happy married life. Your husband has, I think, prospered. I think there is a young lady concerned in the case. Perhaps a young lady in your husband's office."
"A typist," said Mrs. Packington. "A nasty, made-up little minx, all lipstick and silk stockings and curls."
The words rushed from her. Mr. Parker Pyne nodded in a soothing manner.
"There is no real harm in it. That is your husband's phrase, I have no doubt."
"His very words."
"Why, therefore, Should he not enjoy a pure friendship with this young lady, and be able to bring a little brightness, a little pleasure, into her dull existence? Poor child, she has so little fun. Those, I imagine, are his sentiments?
Mrs. Packington nodded with vigour.
Humbug! All humbug! He takes her on the river? I'm fond of going on the river myself. But 5 or 6 years ago he said it interfered with his golf. But he can give up golf for her. I like the theatre. George has always said he's too tired to go out at night. Now he takes her out to dance. Dance! And comes back at 3 in the morning.
And doubtless he deplores the fact that women are so jealous. So unreasonably jealous when there is absolutely no cause for jealousy.
Again Mrs. Packington nodded.
That's it.
She asked sharply,
How do you know all this?
Statistics, said Mr. Parker Pine simply.
I'm so miserable, said Mrs. Packington. I've always been a good wife to George. I worked my fingers to the bone in our early days. I helped him to get on. I've never looked at any other man. His things are always mended, he gets good meals, and the house is well and economically run. And now that we've got on in the world and could enjoy ourselves and go out a bit and do all the things I've looked forward to doing some day, well, this...
She swallowed hard. Mr. Parker Pine nodded gravely.
I assure you, I understand your case perfectly.
And can you do anything?
She asked it almost in a whisper.
Certainly, my dear lady. There is a cure. Oh, yes, there is a cure.
What is it?
She waited, round-eyed and expectant. Mr. Parker Pine spoke quietly and firmly.
You will place yourself in my hands, and the fee will be 200 guineas.
200 guineas?
Exactly. You can afford to pay such a fee, Mrs. Packington. You would pay that sum for an operation. Happiness is just as important as bodily health.
I pay you afterwards, I suppose.
On the contrary, said Mr. Parker Pine, you pay me in advance.
Mrs. Packington rose.
I'm afraid I don't see my way to
buying a pig in a poke, said Mr. Parker Pine cheerfully. Well, perhaps you're right. It's a lot of money to risk. You've got to trust me, you see. You've got to pay the money and take a chance. Those are my terms.
200 guineas?
Exactly. 200 guineas. It's a lot of money. Good morning, Mrs. Packington. Let me know if you change your mind.
He shook hands with her, smiling in an unperturbed fashion. When she had gone, he pressed a buzzer on his desk. A forbidding-looking young woman with spectacles answered it.
A file, please, Miss Lemon, and you might tell Claude that I am likely to want him shortly.
A new client?
A new client. At the moment she has jibbed, but she will come back. Probably this afternoon. About 4. Enter her.
Schedule A?
Schedule A, of course. Interesting. How everyone thinks his own case unique. Well, well. Warn Claude. Not too exotic, tell him. No scent. And he'd better get his hair cut short.
It was 4:15 when Mrs. Packington once more entered Mr. Parker Pine's office. She drew out a checkbook, made out a check, and passed it to him. A receipt was given.
And now?
Mrs. Packington looked at him hopefully.
And now, said Mr. Parker Pine, smiling, you will return home. By the first post tomorrow you will receive certain instructions which I shall be glad if you will carry out.
Mrs. Packington went home, in a state of pleasant anticipation. Mr. Packington came home in a defensive mood, ready to argue his position if the scene at the breakfast table was reopened. He was relieved, however, to find that his wife did not seem to be in a combative mood. She was unusually thoughtful. George listened to the radio and wondered whether that dear child Nancy would allow him to give her a fur coat. She was very proud, he knew. He didn't want to offend her. Still, she had complained of the cold. That tweed coat of hers was a cheap affair. It didn't keep the cold out.
He could put it so that she wouldn't mind, perhaps. They must have another evening out soon. It was a pleasure to take a girl like that to a smart restaurant. He could see several young fellows were envying him. She was uncommonly pretty, and she liked him. To her, as she had told him, he didn't seem a bit old. He looked up and caught his wife's eye. He felt suddenly guilty, which annoyed him. What a narrow-minded, suspicious woman Maria was. She grudged him any little bit of happiness. He switched off the radio and went to bed. Mrs. Packington received two unexpected letters the following morning. One was a printed form confirming an appointment at a noted beauty specialist's. The second was an appointment with a dressmaker. The third was from Mr. Parker Pine, requesting the pleasure of her company at lunch at the Ritz that day. Mr. Packington mentioned that he might not be home to dinner that evening, as he had to see a man on business. Mrs. Packington merely nodded absently, and Mr. Packington left the house congratulating himself on having escaped the storm. The beauty specialist was impressive. Such neglect! Madam, but why? This should have been taken in hand years ago. However, it was not too late. Things were done to her face. It was pressed and kneaded and steamed. It had mud applied to it. It had creams applied to it. It was dusted with powder. There were various finishing touches. At last she was given a mirror. I believe I do look younger, she thought to herself. The dressmaking seance was equally exciting. She emerged feeling smart, modish, up to date. At 1:30, Mrs. Packington kept her appointment at the Ritz. Mr. Parker Pine, faultlessly dressed and carrying with him his atmosphere of soothing reassurance, was waiting for her. Charming, he said, an experienced eye sweeping her from head to foot. I have ventured to order you a white lady. Mrs. Packington, who had not contracted the cocktail habit, made no demur. As she sipped the exciting fluid gingerly, she listened to her benevolent instructor. Your husband, Mrs. Packington, said Mr. Parker Pine, must be made to sit up. You understand? To sit up. To assist in that, I am going to introduce you to a young friend of mine. You will lunch with him today. At that moment, a young man came along, looking from side to side. He espied Mr. Parker Pine and came gracefully towards them. Mr. Claude Luttrell? Mrs. Packington. Mr. Claude Luttrell was perhaps just short of 30. He was graceful, debonair, perfectly dressed, and extremely handsome. Delighted to meet you, he murmured. 3 minutes later, Mrs. Packington was facing her new mentor at a small table for two. She was shy at first, but Mr. Luttrell soon put her at her ease. He knew Paris well, and had spent a good deal of time on the Riviera. He asked Mrs. Packington if she were fond of dancing. Mrs. Packington said she was, but that she seldom got any dancing nowadays, as Mr. Packington didn't care to go out in the evenings. Oh, but he couldn't be so unkind as to keep you at home, said Claude Luttrell, smiling and displaying a dazzling row of teeth. Women will not tolerate male jealousy in these days. Mrs. Packington nearly said that jealousy didn't enter into the question, but the words remained unspoken. After all, it was an agreeable idea. Claude Luttrell spoke airily of nightclubs. It was settled that on the following evening, Mrs. Packington and Mr. Luttrell should patronize the popular Lesser Archangel. Mrs. Packington was a little nervous about announcing this fact to her husband. George, she felt, would think it extraordinary, and possibly ridiculous. But she was saved all trouble on this score. She had been too nervous to make her announcement at breakfast, and at 2:00 a telephone message came to the effect that Mr. Packington would be dining in town. The evening was a great success. Mrs. Packington had been a good dancer as a girl, and under Claude Luttrell's skilled guidance, she soon picked up modern steps. He congratulated her on her gown and also on the arrangement of her hair. An appointment had been made for her that morning with a fashionable hairdresser. On bidding her farewell, he kissed her hand in a most thrilling manner.
Mrs. Packington had not enjoyed an evening so much for years. A bewildering 10 days ensued. Mrs. Packington lunched, teed, tangoed, dined, danced, and supped. She heard all about Claude Luttrell's sad childhood. She heard the sad circumstances in which his father lost all his money. She heard of his tragic romance and his embittered feelings towards women generally. On the 11th day, they were dancing at the Red Admiral. Mrs. Packington saw her spouse before he saw her. George was with the young lady from his office. Both couples were dancing. "Hello, George," said Mrs. Packington lightly as their orbits brought them together. It was with considerable amusement that she saw her husband's face grow first red, then purple with astonishment. With the astonishment was blended an expression of guilt. Mrs. Packington felt amusedly mistress of the situation. Poor old George! Seated once more at her table, she watched them. How stout he was! How bald! How terribly he bounced on his feet! He danced in the style of 20 years ago. Poor George! How terribly he wanted to be young! And that poor girl he was dancing with had to pretend to like it. She looked bored enough now, her face over his shoulder where he couldn't see it. How much more enviable, thought Mrs. Packington contentedly, was her own situation. She glanced at the perfect Claude, now tactfully silent. How well he understood her. He never jarred, as husbands so inevitably did jar, after a lapse of years. She looked at him again. Their eyes met. He smiled. His beautiful dark eyes, so melancholy, so romantic, looked tenderly into hers. "Shall we dance again?" he murmured. They danced again. It was heaven. She was conscious of George's apologetic gaze following them. It had been the idea, she remembered, to make George jealous. What a long time ago that was. She really didn't want George to be jealous now. It might upset him. Why should he be upset, poor thing? Everyone was so happy. Mr. Packington had been home an hour when Mrs. Packington got in. He looked bewildered and unsure of himself. He remarked. So, you're back. Mrs. Packington cast off an evening wrap which had cost her 40 guineas that very morning. Yes, she said, smiling, I'm back. George coughed.
Rather odd meeting you.
Wasn't it? Said Mrs. Packington.
I thought it would be a kindness to take that girl somewhere. She's been having a lot of trouble at home. I thought, well, kindness, you know.
Mrs. Packington nodded. Poor old George, bouncing on his feet and getting so hot and being so pleased with himself.
Who's that chap you were with? I don't know him, do I?
Luttrell. His name is Claude Luttrell.
How did you come across him?
Oh, someone introduced me, said Mrs. Packington vaguely.
Rather a queer thing for you to go out dancing at your time of life. Mustn't make a fool of yourself, my dear.
Mrs. Packington smiled. She was feeling much too kindly to the universe in general to make the obvious reply. A change is always nice, she said amiably.
Well, you've got to be careful, you know. A lot of these lounge lizard fellows going about. Middle-aged women sometimes make awful fools of themselves. I'm just warning you, my dear. I don't like to see you doing anything unsuitable.
I find the exercise very beneficial, said Mrs. Packington.
Yes.
I expect you do, too, said Mrs. Packington kindly. The great thing is to be happy, isn't it? I remember your saying so one morning at breakfast, about 10 days ago.
Her husband looked at her sharply, but her expression was devoid of sarcasm. She yawned.
Oh, I must go to bed. Oh, by the way, George, I've been dreadfully extravagant lately. Some terrible bills will be coming in. You don't mind, do you?
Bills?
Said Mr. Packington. Yes, for clothes, and massage and hair treatment. Wickedly extravagant I've been. But I know you don't mind.
She passed up the stairs. Mr. Packington remained with his mouth open. Maria had been amazingly nice about this evening's business. She hadn't seemed to care at all. But it was a pity she had suddenly taken to spending money. Maria, that model of economy. Women. George Packington shook his head. The scrapes that girl's brothers had been getting into lately. Well, he'd been glad to help. All the same, and dash it all, things weren't going too well in the city. Sighing, Mr. Packington, in his turn, slowly climbed the stairs. Sometimes, words that failed to make their effect at the time are remembered later. Not till the following morning did certain words uttered by Mr. Packington really penetrate his wife's consciousness. Lounge lizards, middle-aged women, awful fools of themselves. Mrs. Packington was courageous at heart. She sat down and faced facts. A gigolo. She had read all about gigolos in the papers. Had read, too, of the follies of middle-aged women. Was Claude a gigolo? She supposed he was. But then gigolos were paid for, and Claude always paid for her. Yes, but it was Mr. Parker Pine who paid, not Claude. Or rather, it was really her own 200 guineas. Was she a middle-aged fool? Did Claude Luttrell laugh at her behind her back? Her face flushed at the thought. Well, what of it? Claude was a gigolo. She was a middle-aged fool. She supposed she should have given him something, a gold cigarette case, that sort of thing. A queer impulse drove her out there and then to Asprey's. The cigarette case was chosen and paid for. She was to meet Claude at Claridge's for lunch. As they were sipping coffee, she produced it from her bag. A little present, she murmured. He looked up, frowned. For me? Yes, I hope you like it. His hand closed over it, and he slid it violently across the table. Why did you give me that? I won't take it. Take it back, I say. He was angry. His dark eyes flashed. She murmured, I'm sorry, and put it away in her bag. There was constraint between them that day. The following morning, he rang her up. I must see you. Can I come to your house this afternoon? She told him to come at 3 o'clock. He arrived very white, very tense. They greeted each other. The constraint was more evident. Suddenly, he sprang up and stood facing her. What do you think I am? That's what I've come to ask you. We've been friends, haven't we? Yes. Friends, but all the same, you think I'm, well, a gigolo. A creature who lives on women, a lounge lizard. You do, don't you? No, no. He swept aside her protest. His face had gone very white. You do think that. Well, it's true. That's what I've come to say, it's true. I had my orders to take you about, to amuse you, to make love to you, to make you forget your husband. That was my job. A despicable one, eh? Why are you telling me this? She asked. Because I'm through with it. I can't carry on with it. Not with you. You're different. You're the kind of woman I could believe in. Trust. Adore. You think I'm just saying this, that it's part of the game? He came closer to her. I'm going to prove to you it isn't. I'm going away. Because of you. I'm going to make myself into a man instead of the loathsome creature I am because of you. He took her suddenly in his arms. His lips closed on hers, then he released her and stood away. Goodbye. I've been a rotter, always, but I swear it will be different now. Do you remember once saying you liked to read the advertisements in the agony column? On this day, every year, you'll find there a message from me saying that I remember and am making good. You'll know then all you've meant to me. One thing more. I've taken nothing from you. I want you to take something from me. He drew a plain gold seal ring from his finger. This was my mother's. I'd like you to have it. Now, goodbye. George Packington came home early. He found his wife gazing into the fire with a faraway look. She spoke kindly but absently to him.
"Look here, Maria," he jerked out suddenly. "About that girl."
"Yes, dear?"
I never meant to upset you, you know, about her. Nothing in it."
"I know, I was foolish. See as much as you like of her if it makes you happy."
These words surely should have cheered George Packington. Strangely enough, they annoyed him. How could you enjoy taking a girl about when your wife fairly urged you on? Dash it all, it wasn't decent. All that feeling of being a gay dog, of being a strong man playing with fire, fizzled out and died an ignominious death. George Packington felt suddenly tired, and a great deal poorer in pocket. The girl was a shrewd little piece.
We might go away together somewhere for a bit if you like, Maria, he suggested timidly.
Oh, never mind about me, I'm quite happy.
But I'd like to take you away. We might go to the Riviera.
Mrs. Packington smiled at him from a distance. Poor old George. She was fond of him. He was such a pathetic old dear. There was no secret splendor in his life, as there was in hers. She smiled more tenderly still.
That would be lovely, my dear, she said.
Mr. Parker Pine was speaking to Miss Lemon.
Entertainment account?
£102.14, said Miss Lemon. The door was pushed open, and Claude Luttrell entered. He looked moody.
Good morning, Claude, said Mr. Parker Pine. Everything go off satisfactorily?
I suppose so.
The ring. What name did you put in it, by the way?
Matilda, said Claude gloomily. 1899.
Excellent. What wording for the advertisement?
Making good. Still remember. Claude.
I make a note of that, please, Miss Lemon. The agony column. November 3rd for, let me see, expenses, £102, 14 and 6, yes, for 10 years, I think. That leaves us a profit of £92, 2 and 4pence. Adequate, quite adequate.
Miss Lemon departed.
Look here, Claude burst out. I don't like this. It's a rotten game. My dear boy, a rotten game. That was a decent woman, a good sort. Telling her all those lies, filling her up with this sob stuff, dash it all, it makes me sick.
Mr. Parker Pine adjusted his glasses and looked at Claude with a kind of scientific interest.
Dear me, he said dryly.
I do not seem to remember that your conscience ever troubled you during your somewhat notorious career. Your affairs on the Riviera were particularly brazen. And your exploitation of Mrs. Hattie West, the Californian cucumber king's wife, was especially notable for the callous mercenary instinct you displayed.
Well, I'm beginning to feel different, grumbled Claude. It isn't nice, this game.
Mr. Parker Pine spoke in the voice of a headmaster, admonishing a favorite pupil.
You have, my dear Claude, performed a meritorious action. You have given an unhappy woman what every woman needs, a romance. A woman tears a passion to pieces and gets no good from it, but a romance can be laid up in lavender and looked at all through the long years to come. I know human nature, my boy. And I tell you that a woman can feed on such an incident for years.
He coughed.
We have discharged our commission to Mrs. Packington very satisfactorily.
Well, muttered Claude, I don't like it. He left the room. Mr. Parker Pine took a new file from a drawer. He wrote,
Interesting vestiges of a conscience noticeable in hardened lounge lizard.
Note,
study developments.
We hope you've enjoyed The Case of the Middle-Aged Wife, a Parker Pine short story by Agatha Christie, performed by Hugh Fraser. Parker Pyne Investigates, text copyright 1934, Agatha Christie Limited. Production copyright 2004, Harper Collins Publishers Limited, all rights reserved. If you've enjoyed this Agatha Christie story, don't miss Parker Pyne Investigates, available as a downloadable audiobook. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.